It's not a difficult contract provision. It's three sentences. You just read it. How many of you think you can remember it? I'm not going to get you to tell me, but just by show of hands, how many of you, and it was all about remedies for a contract, how many of you think you could remember the two remedies that were in that three-sentence paragraph? One, two, three, four, five, six, a few of you, a smattering. It wasn't long, and I think I gave you a lot of time to read it. So let's see if we can make it better somehow. So I'm going to give you a new version, and I've actually made it longer. I've added some words, and I want to see how quickly. Just raise your hand when you've identified the two remedies. Do you see the difference? Can you experience? When you get the heading up front that tells you the subject of what you're about to read, and then you get your details structured in a very simple outline, you're able to extract that information much more quickly. The web uses that all the time. Most contract provisions don't. I had a house closing several years ago where one of my contracts had headings and numbers, and I was able to skim it really quick. The other one didn't, and I got bogged down, and you could see the agents in the room just really getting impatient because I was actually reading the contract. Headings really help readers. And so let me give you some examples of how they help. In a statement of facts, I find short headings that are kind of like chapter headings in a children's book really help narrate the story and help you to go back later and find parts of the story if you're a reader and you're looking for parts of the story. In a summary of argument, if I have a multi-issue case, I will label each issue at the beginning of each paragraph with one or two sentences, not a lot, one or two sentences. But for the rest of the argument, I don't do that. For the rest of the argument, every step of the argument, I'm going to explain why, but every step of the argument is a complete sentence. And I try to keep them short if I can, but I need them to be long enough to express the argument of the section. And the reason is, I want the reader to be able to see the arguments I'm making without going in and reading the arguments. I want them to read the table of contents and see what the arguments in the brief are. I want them to see what an argument is before they start reading all the support for it. And so in the table of contents, for instance, it's a hierarchy of your arguments. It provides a logical summary of your brief. And so you look at something like this, and you're able to get a map of the substance of the argument. You're actually able to tell what the case is about. And you're not from a table of contents that just has two or three word headings, right? And the reason is, this is why, and I can't prove this, but I know this axiom is true. You cannot express an argument in any unit of speech shorter than a sentence. It has to be a sentence. You can't make an argument with a phrase. So there are other kinds of tables, one of which one of my partners, I think, may have come up with. He was working with the Texas Supreme Court back in 1997. They were coming out with their new petition for review process, which is sort of like a cert petition process. And the section of the rules of appellate procedure for statement of the case, most people were doing these long procedural summaries of the case in paragraph form. And he was working with the court, and someone on the court said, you know, we never read these. They're not helpful. There's some basic bits of information that we're trying to extract from the statement of the case. And maybe if you could do a table to show us those basic bits of information that are required by the rules. And so he did. And you see this today in most good civil appellate briefs. You will see a statement of case that's in this table form and not a long narrative. I don't know if that's true on the criminal side or not. Tip number two, start each unit of text with a summary. So when I say a unit of text, I'm talking about a paragraph, I'm talking about a section of the argument, I'm talking about the brief itself. Summaries help the readers process the details that follow. So for me, I view that there's really two types of document level summaries for an appellate brief. One is a table of contents in your list of headings. The second is a summary of argument. And for so long, I used to teach a law school class on writing briefs, and the worst part of the briefs from students was always a summary of argument, because it would be really conclusory, and they'd just go through and state all their conclusions. They'd basically restate the parts of their brief. And what I discovered, the secret to a good summary of argument is give a roadmap of what your general arguments are, but give a handful of specifics, the one or two most important facts if the case turns on facts, or the law, the one or two most important reasons why the law should be what you say it is and not what the other side says it is. And it's those specifics that really persuade in a summary of argument, but it shouldn't be more than usually a page or page and a half. Issue level summaries, I always have a paragraph at the beginning of each issue that sums up what the argument is going to be. And then at the paragraph level, you saw with the F pattern, people were reading the first sentences of paragraphs much more than the rest. It's really critical, even more so today, to put the point of your paragraph in the first sentence. And then the rest of the paragraph, if you have more, is to explain that, is to support that primary point. I do a summary at the beginning of statements of facts in cases where they're longer than a few pages. And one or two paragraphs to introduce a story like the back of a paperback novel. I'm sure this is something that's really would be easy to do in most criminal cases, but especially where it's a long involved story, it helps to know what the story's about up front. Here's one from a civil case. This case concerns a trucking company dispatcher who made plans to resign from his employer and start his own trucking company. He not only told his employer about his plans, but he waited to compete with his employer until after he resigned. His former employer then sued him, claiming he breached a fiduciary duty by stealing former customers. Now, many of you don't know much about